Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 315 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He has a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's show, we're doing our trivial trivia, as always. A little bit of conversation about some things going on in the movie world that Trevor and I are finding to be important at the moment. The game This or That, where I throw 20 movies at Trevor, make him pick his favorite 10 out of those, and then we go through that one by one with my opinion as well. Reviews for La La Land, Moonlight, Fences, Get a Job, Inferno, and Morgan, as well as the Super Bowl spots for Fast and Furious, Pirates of the Caribbean, the full-length trailer of Aftermath, and Beauty and the Beast. We got a full show. Stay with us. If you guys haven't done so, rate us on iTunes, review the show, you know, fair reviews. We're not asking for anything special, but just get the word out there. Let's get those ratings up.
I'm asking for something a little special. You know, I like to be wined and dined before I'm fucked.
You really are classy. I know you are. You got a little halo around you. So Trevor's the highfalutin one. I am just the low gutter guy begging you to go to iTunes and rate the show. You know what's interesting about iTunes? This is now our 315th show, mm-hmm. and that they only carry 300 episodes. So luckily, our beginning
that's fine,
episodes
yeah.
that are terrible are slowly disappearing.
We can wipe those out, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of those, the little grinding of the gears there, you know? It's like watching me parallel park. It's not pretty. However, let's get into this trivia. I saw La La Land this week. We'll get into that a little later in the show, but trivia springs from that. So we'll say, how many movies has Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone appeared in together? And if you can, name the movies.
I feel like this is a trick question.
Is it?
But I can't think of that it would be. There's three that I really know of.
Which are?
With Crazy Stupid Love, La La Land, obviously, and then Gangster Squad.
Which is right. No, you nailed it on the head.
Is there another one?
I didn't think you'd remember the Gangster Squad connection because they're both kind of lost in that movie in a way. You know, neither of them are really the headliner. They're kind of part of the ensemble.
I guess. I mean, that was the only reason I think anyone remembers that movie is because that was after Crazy Stupid Love. Everyone fell in love with them as an on-screen couple. And then and a couple years later, that came out and everyone made a big deal about it.
I still haven't seen Crazy Stupid Love. I got to watch
it. It's a great movie.
I know. Everybody tells me that. And I'm a fan of This Is Us, which is, you know, done by the creators of Crazy Stupid Love. So I gotta check it out. I do like them together. You know, if this was the 90s, they'd be like, to me, their chemistry is almost...
They'd be Justin and Brittany?
No. I guess in a way, yeah.
Yeah, we had good couples back then, didn't we?
Let's go even earlier 90s then, shall we? And I'd say Richard Gere and Julia Roberts. They have that kind of chemistry to me where it doesn't feel brother-sister, yeah. but it's not totally sexual either.
It's really just an on-screen professional thing, and it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of when they teamed up for like Runaway Bride and Pretty Woman, obviously, and some of those movies. All right, let's get into it. What are you talking about tonight? We got some topics. What do you got for us? I actually didn't write them in here.
We're just gonna wing it, I guess. You know, I guess the big news is Ben Affleck's no longer directing the new Batman movie, so they're looking for new directors. Kevin Smith's already bowed out, which I really don't think he was ever asked, but
yeah, no shit. What, he decided not to run for president either? I mean,
yeah, I know
this guy.
But it certainly is interesting. You know, we've been talking about Ben Affleck quite a bit this year already, especially, you know, framed in the idea that he is his Warner Brothers' new guy. And here he is, you know, probably half removing himself and half being removed from this, from being the director of this, right?
It feels mutually like it was a mutual decision. Yeah. I think the writing was on the wall when he was saying things like, well, if the script isn't there, I'm not going to do this. And then was saying, I mean, you read the comment about, I don't know how I'm going to direct the film wearing that suit. It'll be very cumbersome.
And I would agree too, though.
I agree, but he was already dropping those bits kind of make this not such a shock. So, you know, I thought this was just a matter of time.
Well, Kevin
Smith, I don't know if this project materializes now, though. Do you? Do you think this comes to fruition?
I don't know. It's hard to say. It could change. Like Kevin Smith was saying, he would likely bowed out because he didn't want to have any blame for it. you know, and when you are talking about DC and stuff, kind of having a little bit of a rocky time now, and those Nolan Batman movies being so revered as they are, like, you know, you might find yourself getting even more screwed than he already is now, right? He's already kind of had a lot of flops, so to speak.
Is the blowback that Zack Snyder's incurred. You know, maybe in a couple years from now, we can look at some of Zack Snyder's work a little less skewed. I really think Watchmen...
I don't think so. Watchmen's fantastic.
It's fantastic. I think that 300 is obviously fantastic.
But the movies that he made that suck, suck. And I don't think any amount of time is going to make them any better.
Look, I think Sucker Punch is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But I don't think that Batman and Superman is as bad as that. You know, I don't think it's I think people are being a little bit. So that's what happens, though, when you follow.
It's a bad movie, though. I mean, I don't think that it needs a comparison to anything. It's just a shit movie. You know, no comparison necessary. I know that that's a crap movie. If I've never seen a movie before, I'd probably start getting a little bored.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, so I don't know. Should he take over? I mean, that's what people are calling for now, is for Snyder to actually take over this movie. That might be the only way that it gets made, so.
I just think, yeah, I think that this was maybe just too much of a good idea. You know, I think we got Affleck. He's doing this. He can bring some sort of legitimacy to this character and this role. Yeah. But how many screen iterations do we need? How far away
from... How can you keep rebirthing the same character over and over again?
Yeah. I mean, Marvel, luckily...
But it was a good idea, the older Batman.
Marvel's getting Spider-Man back, and that's the only thing that adds anything new to that whole picture. So that's kind of... a push there, you know, gambler's term. But I think that here, this was going to be a risky proposition. And the fact that Live by Night lost all that money and that the last Batman film wasn't that well received is contributing to both these.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's move on. Let's talk about Harry Shearer's $400 million lawsuit, $400 million against Vivendi Universal for unpaid residuals on 22 years worth of This Is Spinal Tap paraphernalia and all sorts of gear. And he's saying, he's quoted as saying he's received $65 for his rights of the soundtrack and $81 in merchandising in 22 years, which he has jokingly said is about enough to buy one miniature Stonehenge. If you've ever seen the movie, he's very great, you know.
He's a funny guy. Yeah.
But also, you know, he's been joined in this lawsuit by Christopher Guest, Michael McKean, and Rob Reiner. So there's got to be, we've always heard about the shady accounting practices of these.
Yeah, you wonder how they found out, right?
They got to know that they're due money after they see the things on T-shirts and all sorts of, you know, it's pop culture.
I don't know. Depending on what the contracts say, they could be worth, they could not, they have nothing, you know. I don't know about it. They obviously feel that they do, but then if that's the case, why did it take so long, right? I mean, Vivendi doesn't even own Universal anymore.
I know, right?
Right? Like, I don't know.
It's Vivendi, for their part, has come out and said that they have that their music and merchandising, this is total, in a 20-year period, only has profited $179. Which is obviously bullshit. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that seems a little low. Even though I don't believe that $400 million would be a number that would be owed to him either.
Right.
Because I don't see how that possibly made that amount of money. It wasn't that big of a movie.
No, but it was a small enough budgeted film, and it was, you know, pretty much a staple on cable and things like that. And it becomes...
But to owe, yeah.
$400 million is ridiculous. I think that's obviously, you know, to settle very low after that, or a starting point. But apparently some sort of provision in the Copyright Act states that because the characters were created in 1978, the license wouldn't go back to them until 2019, which is 35 years after the initial release. So, worst comes to worst, they wait out a couple more years and they can get the rights back for merchandising.
Oh, but
I didn't think there was that many people.
Yeah, exactly. I guess selling coffee mugs and pins and shit, whatever the big money is, right?
I just want a t-shirt with 1980s era Rob Reiner on it. That's what I'm looking for.
Right.
What else you got? We had one other thing, right?
Paramount. Paramount's shifting up its schedule here. They've taken World War Z 2 off the schedule, and I guess not canceled it yet, but they have canceled the Friday the 13th remake.
Let's get into these one. But first of all, World War Z one was an absolute clusterfuck for them to get out. I mean, they had to stop, reshoot that thing. For it to have turned out as good as it did, which I thought was a really good movie, and for it to be as big as a box office hit, was somewhat of a fluke. I mean, that movie to me, it works despite itself in a lot of ways. And the idea that a second one was coming out and it was on their schedule and they kept talking about it, you never heard any movement, director, writer. You never heard Pitt talking about going away to star in it or any of that kind of stuff. It always seemed like this was never going to happen. And now it truly, I believe, will never happen.
Yeah, I got pulled. It might be too late at this point, really, to be pushing out a major zombie movie again. I don't know. When you look at all the past types of movies like that have come out lately, they've all been pretty big bombs.
Yeah, maybe its expiration date is just...
Yeah, I think they're a little fearful of that. And the same thing with their Friday the 13th stuff. They're obviously scared that it's not going to go so well, and I would agree, so...
Really? That surprises me, because the one they released in 2009, which was pure shite, opened up to $40 million. That shows a need for that character.
But that's a long... That was a while ago, right?
2009, I mean, it's not like it's the 80s. I mean...
That's almost a decade ago.
Oh my God, it is. I thought we were still in 2012 for a second. Okay, that
I'm just talking about recently, you see movies, the horror movies like that have not done well. So I think they got scared of it. But I think there's like some sort of a rights issue as well here. They're like straddling the rights, the line to where this property goes back to New Line, I guess.
Oh God, it's always some sort of rush job to get this shit out so that, you know, to keep on to the... It's always like, you know, it's like Rocky said to Mickey, it was always an angle to hang on to the title for longer than you should have had it. You know, it's like that.
Right.
There's no reason for them to have
that's it. That's Rocky from Rocky and Bullwinkle and Mickey from Mickey Mouse, right?
My two favorite characters in country history. And cinematic icons as well. But this to me seems like a botched opportunity. The fact that they had Breck Eisner behind it, behind the lens, who does things visually pleasing, no matter if they're schlock or not. I mean, he always is decent behind the camera, so I can watch his stuff. And Bay was going to produce it again. And I wouldn't mind to see a new Jason movie, as long as it's not something like Jason X or some of that shit that we had, you know, Jason Goes to Hell, where it's a true slasher movie. But Rings failing at the box office hurts it. You know, there's this high-minded kind of thing going on in the horror genre right now. You know, it's got to have James Wan's name on it, or
Ghosts and Spirits and things are doing well, right? Or little smaller movies are doing well again, which is where these movies came from, right? That's what horror is, and what a lot of these remakes are doing, and even Rings and stuff is just super glossed over. So I don't know, it doesn't translate as well, right? It doesn't have the same feeling.
Well, after coming off a year where horror films and comedies, two genres that typically, you know, carry surprise hits in there for the year, really neither of that happened last year. But Don't Breathe was really because more of a thriller than a horror film. And this year you have Split, which it's got horror elements, which is doing very well. So I thought it was going to lead to resurgence. You know, horror is back in 2017. And so for them to cancel this is somewhat surprising, because I thought, well, that's going to spawn, you know, that having 3 weeks at top of the box office, Split, that is going to spawn a lot of horror films coming at you. But it's the opposite, I guess. It's actually suffocated the marketplace. Because look at The Bye Bye Man, which
a lot of horror films
well
have come out. Yeah. But I mean, Blumhouse is clearly the guys that are doing it right at this point.
For budget reasons.
For every reason, right? I mean, the movies work, they make money. I shouldn't say they make money. They sell tickets. People go and see them. You know, people don't go and see these other high-end horror movies that are being made. And these things are often just not new. They're old, right? They're just remakes.
I think the genre that was most affected by social media and the spread of word of mouth on an opening night is horror movies. Mm-hmm. Because you could have a shitty horror. I mean, I guess you could say this of all movies, but you could have... I think it really rings true for horror, but you could have a really shitty horror movie and it would play for a weekend, if not a week, before the word really saturated that it was sucked. Now it gets fucking murdered. You look at something like The Blair Witch, which probably would have done double the business a decade ago, just gets annihilated because that opening day, everybody's telling everyone, stay away from this bomb. You know, and the cinema scores, I typically don't take into account, you know, that kind of...
Well, they even get it before the movie comes out now.
Yeah, I think those line up fairly accurately for the horror genre when I see those scores. And The Ring's got a C-. So if your core audience says it's, you know, pretty shitty, good luck. Because that's a, I mean, I saw Split and it was mostly teenagers. You said the same thing in your screening.
Well, I think that you get that good horror, or horror movies that sell a lot of tickets work on for both men and women, right?
Yeah.
And so they can't be like too disgusting and gross because the girls aren't going to want to come see it. You know, but you look at something like Split and it's perfect, right? It's a more of a thriller, but it's still scary, still has horror elements in it. And so it just hits all the demographics.
You know, the last time I saw that with a horror movie was with the Paranormal Activity movies, the first couple. When you saw people of all ages, ethnicities, you know, genders coming and seeing that, because you can relate to the fact of a haunted house and something being inside your home and not holy. And it just, you know, that really affected a lot of people. And that was a word of mouth deal, too. Obviously, that got spun off into a million different ways. But I never saw that kind of fever for Saw or that kind of like the torture porn era, which I'm so glad we're past. I really am. I mean, I know that some of those had a merit to them.
Well, I still like them. I would like to see, you know, them, but they have to be good, right?
I mean, I'm not talking about the Saw movies in general. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the ones that followed it, like Captive and the shit ones, you know, in its wake, the bad hostile ones. And
yeah,
I mean,
well, I was just,
two was good, but
it is. I was just going to say, in agreement with what you're saying, yes, you know, all it takes is just everyone to storm the walls, right, to make this copycat shit movie to just kill the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they just, then it's somehow the genre finds itself, you know, anew. But James Wan really is doing interesting things in the genre. So,
no, and he hits all the demographics. You know, he hits all the right notes as well. A lot of his stuff's been really good. So,
how long until we see like his name above a title, like John Carpenter's used to be, you know, James Wan's The Conjuring or something like that? Because his name does hold weight in the genre.
I don't need to look. I think that I've already seen his name thrown around in on trailers.
Title. I know. I'm just talking about like, you know, how they used to, like, it wasn't Big Trouble in Little China. It was John Carpenter's Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know what I mean? Like Wes Craven's.
Right.
I don't know.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our new game, This or That.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Okay.
All right. All right, so this is the new new segment where I take 10 movies and line them up with 10 other movies that are very similar. It's kind of like a splitting hairs game here, and I throw them at Trevor rapid-fire style. He gives me a knee-jerk reaction, and then we go back through them together, and I give my opinion on them as well.
All right.
All right, I feel like I'm getting good at this game show shit here.
I'm going to double down.
All right. Now, these are very similar, and they're off the wall. So here we go. Eyes Wide Shut or Vanilla Sky?
Eyes Wide Shut.
Battleship or Transformers 4?
Holy shit. Transformers 4.
Skyfall or Spectre?
Skyfall.
Gremlins or Small Soldiers?
Gremlins.
Rush Hour 3 or Beverly Hills Cop 3?
Beverly Hills Cop 3?
Sleepy Hollow or From Hell?
Oh, From Hell.
The Fighter or The Wrestler?
The Wrestler.
The Expendables or The A-Team?
Oh, The Expendables.
The Total Recall remake or the RoboCop remake?
Total Recall.
The Wolf of Wall Street or American Hustle?
American Hustle.
All right, let's go through these together.
These were interesting this time. Are you running out of movies?
No, I'm just trying to get very
excited. These are weird.
Very eclectic on that. Yeah. You running out of movies over there? No, I'm only doing 40 a show here.
Imagine having some odd ones here. All right.
All right. So we got Eyes Wide Shut or Vanilla Sky.
I picked Eyes Wide Shut because I couldn't. We've talked about doing a Vanilla Sky podcast because I don't really remember Vanilla Sky. So to be fair, I guess I have to pick Eyes Wide Shut.
I would go Vanilla Sky on this one because I remember liking it more than I mean, both of these I've seen. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen Eyes Wide Shut more times just because it's the Kubrick movie.
I've seen it several times. I like Eyes Wide Shut.
I don't know. I'm still in the middle. I'm on the middle of the road on that one. I got to go back and look at it again. All right, next we got Battleship or Transformers 4. Both shit. I mean, let's be honest.
This was tough. I said Transformers 4, but I don't. I mean,
I'll go Battleship just because it's shorter.
If you say so. I don't know. I thought they had the same movie.
I bet you could cut a trailer with clips from both of these into one fake movie, you know? And no one would know the difference. All right, we got Skyfall or Spectre.
Yeah, and Skyfall, I think, all the way.
Yeah, I agree. But although I went back and rewatched Spectre a couple nights ago and liked it a little bit more than I did when I saw it in theater. So I think it plays better at home, but that second hour still drags.
It's not as good as Skyfall. I mean, Skyfall has got its problems, but it's at least, I don't know, it's a better movie.
Yep. Gremlins or Small Soldiers, both Joe Dante films.
Yeah, I said Gremlins. Small Soldiers is a great movie, but Small Soldiers is a little more on the child side for me. You know, it's a little more family friendly than Gremlins. So I go Gremlins. I like it. It's funnier.
I agree with you 100% all the way for all your same points. So let's move on and talk about Rush Hour 3 or Beverly Hills Cop 3, both crippling entries.
What the hell?
Yeah. Shitty series. Well, because Rush Hour 3 was always the wannabe Beverly Hills Cop, right? It was the franchise like that.
Beverly Hills Cop over Rush Hour always, right?
Always, every entry. Yeah, but even this one, this was a bad one. They filmed this at Great America up here in the Bay Area. In the 90s, a lot of this for the amusement park scenes. And it still sucked, even though it was like at my local amusement park.
Yeah.
All right, next we got Sleepy Hollow or From Hell, both Johnny Depp kind of Victorian era films.
Right. I say From Hell, which I think is a great movie.
Underrated movie, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And Sleepy Hollow is good and everything, but I don't know. It's not the best, but From Hell is really surprisingly good.
Sleepy Hollow to me was hilarious because he was still doing his what I called his Hunter S. Thompson shtick, Johnny Depp, that is.
Yeah.
Which he then kind of perfected into his Jack Sparrow shtick. And From Hell is a straight up beautiful movie by the Hughes brothers that more people should see. So I agree with you on that. Next we have The Fighter or The Wrestler, Marky Mark's boxing movie or Mickey Rourke's wrestling film.
I picked The Wrestler, but I don't know.
I don't like either of these movies.
This is a coin. Yeah, that's what I say. It's a coin toss for me because there are parts to both that I like, and then there are parts that just ruin the entire movies.
I guess I'd go with The Fighter just because I like the story better. But the wrestler's so maudlin. I mean, it's so self-serving and important and downbeat. And I never was won over by any of its. I thought it was just kind of hokey when I saw it. I never understood all the attention it got. As much as I like Rourke, I didn't think he was all that great in that movie. I thought his fucking monologue in The Expendables was better than anything he did in The Wrestler. And that's saying something.
I don't know. I wasn't a fan of that monologue, so.
All right, let's see what we got next. The Expendables 1 or The A-Team, both released in the summer of 2010.
This is the one that's just, that's a mismatch, I think.
Really?
Yeah, because in what world does that A-Team movie really stand up against much of anything?
I didn't hate it as much as you did. I remember you actually had Venom for that movie. You know what happened?
It's a terrible fucking movie.
Loathed it. So by the time I got around to see it, I thought,
I softened the blow for you. Yeah.
But they're both Man on a Mission movies. But the first Expendables, problem ridden at all, is a better movie than the A-Team.
Yeah.
Where Liam Neeson is just miscast in that movie. Let's be frank. And the movie's kind of just all for naught.
This is a bad movie.
All right, next we have the Total Recall remake or the RoboCop remake. Two movies that I think are less than stellar. Let's be honest here. And about on par. This is, I think, the hardest one to tell apart from each other on the whole show.
Maybe. I think the Total Recall remake has a nicer direction, so it wins on that one.
I think that the RoboCop remake is a little bit more high-minded in trying to merge things into today's world, and that's also what makes it less entertaining. And I think that Len Wiseman's appreciation of the original material is a little bit more evident. But it must suck for Paul Verhoeven to have two of his films remade in two successive years, kind of mediocrity. All right, last we have The Wolf of Wall Street or American Hustle. The Martin Scorsese movie or the wannabe Martin Scorsese movie? Which one?
Well, I don't... the wannabe Martin Scorsese?
Well, to me, American Hustle was David Russell out Scorsese-ing Scorsese.
I mean, I guess, essentially, I don't know. He kind of... I mean, to us on the outside, yeah, I agree. But I don't think he's doing it on purpose. This is just what he's gravitating towards. And I thought it was a great movie, personally. I really don't give a shit who directed it. It's just one of those movies that you don't think is going to be all that great. You know, you don't have any expectations for it necessarily, but it really is good. And I think it's better than Wolf of Wall Street, you know, which is a great movie in and of itself, but...
Yeah, I think these are both good movies. Let's just be honest here. But if I had to, you know, like grade them here, it would be a 4 for American Hustle and like a 3.5 for Wolf of Wall Street. You know, it's just a difference, but not much of a difference there in terms of what they're trying to accomplish and the whole nine. Yeah, I like that movie a lot. All right, you got anything you want to recommend that's streaming online? Any picks out there for anybody? You watch anything?
No, we've been watching Marin, the Marc Maron show on Netflix there, and that's really good.
Is it good?
It is, but you know, if you've seen any HBO or Showtime shows or Netflix shows, you know, in the last few years, it's exactly like all those.
Yeah,
so get you know, used to it. Which I guess is the new thing.
Yeah, it's off network standard.
Well, I think we have Louis C.K. to thank for this for Louis. You know, doing so well and being so amazing. And then now everyone makes their shows just like his.
Yeah.
It's still good, but, you know, it's like, shit, at this point, you've seen it, you know?
You also become aware of how delicately and well done Louis is done, you know, how well it's put together.
Yeah.
Because he straddles that line beautifully between kind of the absurd and the, it's his version. I always thought of Curb Your Enthusiasm, just with his personality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to recommend Any Given Sunday. The director's cut's out there on HBO Go. Great Oliver Stone movie. And football season just ended. People might be hankering for some football. And,
really? I thought we'd be done with it.
Well, I've been done with it, my friend. But people are out there moping around. So they're so bored. So check out Any Given Sunday on HBO Go.
Yeah, it's a good flick.
All right, let's do the trailers.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
We skipped reviews. Ah, we'll do them later.
Ah, fuck, we did skip reviews. All right, yeah, we'll do trailers first. All right, what are we going to talk about first? Let's talk about Aftermath, the Schwarzenegger movie.
Do we have to talk about it?
Is this going straight to video? What's the
Can we just say there's a new Schwarzenegger movie and just not talk about it?
I don't think it looks as bad as like Maggie.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Maggie looked fantastic and stunk like shit.
Maybe this is the opposite.
This movie looks like shit though.
What is it? Is it a drama? Is it an action film? Like I didn't. Is he going after the air traffic controller guy?
Yeah, he claims it's some sort of a revenge movie. You know, the air traffic controller guy apparently turns his back on the radar for a minute, and the planes crash, and Schwarzenegger's wife and or what his granddaughter, I guess, or his daughter, who's pregnant with his granddaughter, gets killed. And then it's all about him coming to terms with that and I guess getting an apology from this guy.
Yeah, that's
which is the part that gets me. Like, is this a revenge thing? Because they kind of give it like he finds a guy and it's in the trailer, right? Dude opens the door. There's Schwarzenegger. He's there. He's going to get his apology. I mean, is he just going to be like,
yeah, I think hello, that they edited this to
I want
make
my
it look
apology
more-
and then he's going to go, oh, I'm sorry. And then that's it.
Yeah, they even hug, and that's going to be that.
Right? I can't tell. Because it certainly doesn't look like he's ever really in any danger or that he's going to hurt this guy or that he, you know, has any of that stuff, kind of stuff going on.
It's an oddly put together trailer, and the fact that they're trying to sell it more of an action film, and there's not one beat of action, but the way that the music's cut, and but it doesn't look bad. It just looks like it's being missold. So be prepared for a slow drama.
Well, the quality looks bad, I thought, though. You didn't think it looked like it was shot for TV? Like, it looks quality-wise really poorly.
I was like, okay, this is, you know, on the level of a Redbox premiere or Netflix, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes, but shouldn't they be able to do it better? I mean, if I was making this for TV, it would look better. It just looks terrible.
Well, I mean, Schwarzenegger looks terrible. Let's be honest. I'm like, Jesus.
Well, he's old.
It looks like he's become Sean Connery.
What's going on here?
I mean, so Stallone, but the guy's still fucking pumping acid in his veins.
Well, so Schwarzenegger, he's not out of shape. I mean, you're making it sound like he showed up and he was just a bag of wrinkles. You know, he's not Harrison Ford.
That's true.
You know, he's still working out and everything. He still has, I don't know what the hell I would say about it. He's not as big as he was, obviously, but he's not.
Make no mistake, I'd have watched anything these guys did if this was 15 years ago.
Well, I would like to have seen it be a little bit more action-oriented, or if it's going to be a drama, I don't know, not this. This looks like a Lifetime movie. I don't get it.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Beauty and the Beast, which has got a full-length trailer that we both saw, and I want to see this even. I think this is going to be a massive success. I really do. I think this is perfectly done. Everything in this trailer I like. I think it looks fantastic. I mean, I think this is going to be a smash.
You're really going out on a limb there.
You didn't like this trailer?
Yeah, God, I loved it. Who doesn't? You think this is going to be a smash? Of course it is, right?
This is gonna be a Star Wars size.
It's going to be so big. Oh, yeah, I know, because it meets. Yeah, I don't know, for all the complaining about just straight remakes and stuff, this is the movie that deserves it more than anything, right? I don't want this to be any different. The cartoon's really a fantastic movie, it looks like they bring it just to life, really.
The cartoon was the first animated feature to be nominated for Best Picture. And there's if the movie version of this delivers like this trailer, it's very possible that this could be nominated next year. I mean, it looks like that level of kind of artistry and talk about a four-quadrant picture. I mean, who isn't this going to appeal to? I mean, the nostalgia factor, the music, the visuals, I mean, all of that combined. I think, you know, The Jungle Book was a big success. Look for this to be, if not, you know, time and a half, two times as big. This is going to be it's a fucking smash this year. All these songs will be reintroduced. I mean, they just the piano riff of the Beauty and the Beast, it has you humming. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know. It has great music in it, you know? It's something that they've been missing, I felt, for quite a while, is good music in these Disney movies. Yeah. And so it's nice to just go back and hear this and think, oh, yeah, that's what great music sounds like. That's what wonderful orchestra can do, you know? A nice piece. And just that music, even in the teaser trailers, right? All you had to do was play the music.
Yeah.
You got really, me, you got know? It. Yeah. I'm good.
Oh, yeah, show me that fucking rose in the glass case. And give me a couple
play the music.
Got me. Here's $10. All right, next is Fast and Furious. Talk about spending $10 for no fucking reason. Fast and Furious Part 8 gets a Super Bowl trailer that, I'll say it once again, we have come so far away from them stealing DVD players.
I'm so confused.
In LA.
What's even, I mean, so Charlize Theron is like an evil muse, right? And she's somehow taken over Vin Diesel here, but obviously not really, right? I mean,
of course,
wink, but, right? I mean, it's like, what?
But they have to give it, you know, now Jason Statham could be somewhat of a good guy.
Yeah.
This is going to be kind of the bad guy, but we'll change it all back for the next one. This is talk about spinning your fucking wheels, literally and figuratively. I mean,
This is like one of the few, I don't know, are there any other really franchises that just roll around picking up fucking people and, you know, just like whoever it rolls over, they just have to include them in the next one? Like they have to be in the franchise for the rest of the time?
Well, not only that, I mean, this is, talk about a franchise that's like got like bipolar disorder. I mean, they just literally decide that these guys are going to do some new shit that doesn't accomplish anything, sometimes sets
things
back.
Where do they go? Like, what?
How other successful franchise does this? DC would be annihilated if they were doing this kind of shit.
I don't know, but it seems like there's time off in between all the movies where they go and they do shit and they're like, oh, something new has developed. Like, weren't they all together during that time? Like, how did this happen? Like, how do people have secrets here? Like, what the fuck is going on? You know what? I want to know what happens over Christmas break in Fast and Furious. You know, where are these characters at?
That's what part are they 10. Doing? I didn't want to tell you that it's a fast Christmas.
Yeah,
because we're family. Family spends Christmas together.
Yeah, right.
That's gonna be the hook.
It's gonna start with them hanging little car ornaments on the tree.
Oh God,
I can really envision it now.
Oh, next they're gonna be having an advent calendar and whatnot.
I live my life one Christmas at a time.
Let's just move on from this. All right, next one that premiered a Super Bowl spot was Pirates of the Caribbean, a full minute-long trailer that did two things. It showed me that Johnny Cash music belongs in every trailer from now on.
I know, right?
And also, it actually piqued my interest in this, and I think enough time has gone by that I might be up for another Pirates movie. What do you think?
Well, I think that the Johnny Cash song tainted me into thinking this is really tricked me, right? Bamboozled me into thinking this might be a good movie.
Yeah, right.
But I can't tell if it was just because of the way the trailer's cut and that song and you know what's going on in the trailer and stuff to get you excited. Is that going to carry on into the movie, you know, or is this just going to be a stupid movie where he shows up and he's like, I'm after pirates, I'm a pirate, I'm trying to get pirates, pirates are getting pirates. We sail around the ocean, there's big waves, monsters come, you know, shit happens. Yeah, that's right every now. Single damn Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
This movie is 145 minutes. I'll tell you right now, sight unseen. It's 145 minutes. It's got Johnny Depp fucking making some wisecracks. It's got some special effects that are going to be cool and bore the shit out of you. And you're going to still see it and pay your money. I actually like the last one, though. I mean, I like the fact that they're doing these little one-offs here and there, even though we just talked shit about the Fast and Furious for doing the exact same thing. They are doing these little one-offs here and there that are outside of like a combined trilogy that they're like stuck in this fucking mythology and this long-winded storytelling. So they can do these little weird adventures. And I don't mind seeing him come back and do this. It's almost like an Indiana Jones type situation for him where he can just keep dropping in and give us these little entries. And it's not an overall, I mean, at least it's not part of like a multiverse at this point is what I'm saying.
It's not?
it's not directly tied into one. I mean, it's not like part 7, 8, 9 of Fast and Furious. Like, oh, this is like a new trilogy. We're going to, you know, it's like every three is a new trilogy.
I guess, yeah.
At least they're linear. I mean, at least it's literally going in order.
I have no idea what's happening anymore.
But
yeah,
the title, Dead Men Tell No Tales, how fucking generic is that?
Yeah, it's not a good title.
It's not. And I thought we'd already got that title. I was telling you off air. I thought, is this the last one?
No, the next one should be called Pirates of the Caribbean. Pirates of the Caribbean.
No, the next one, they'll just go back to The Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, The.
They'll add a The there. Just like the Fast and Furious took away The, they'll add one
they'll
to Pirates.
Add the Pirates.
The Pirates
of the Caribbean. Should be called Pirates.
That should,
Pirates be, colon Caribbean.
It'll be P colon 5.
P5. PC.
This is P5, huh? This would be the fifth one, right? Yeah. Fuck. Five of these things? If you told me back in 2007 they'd make two more, I'd be like, yeah, after At World's End, please. Can you tell me one thing that happens in At World's End? Do you recall one fucking thing?
No. I mean, neither.
I saw it in the theater and I own it and I couldn't tell you one fucking thing. I think that's the one where he maybe gets miniaturized and does like that weird Salvador Dali moment where he's like,
just like, oh,
of him.
That is right. Well, because that's right at the beginning, right? Isn't that kind of the crossover moment at the end of the Dead Man's Chest?
Yeah, okay. So I do recall
the beginning of that. Yeah.
The Gulliver's Travel type.
That's
situation.
A good call. It's a lot like the Matrix sequels, you know, where they spilled over into each other and I can't remember what happens in which one and they both suck. So who cares?
Which obviously, you know, shooting things back to back like those two movies did, that doesn't hurt Back to the Future 2 and 3, which had distinct personalities. At least something's done right. Let's go ahead and talk about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which apparently had the largest uptick in online viewership after the Super Bowl airing. People wanted to see this spot again. Still haven't seen the first one. This one does look good, though, and I think that it's evident that a little bit more care, time, and budget was put into this one. What did you say?
No.
No? You don't think so?
I think as much love went into this as the original. You really got to see the original. The first one. This looks just as good. You know, this movie is making me excited. You know, I want to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And I'm glad that people like James Gunn have found an outlet, you know, in this world of big money, right? Big money movies and stuff.
He didn't get sucked up and lost in the shuffle.
He didn't get screwed. I think, obviously, you know, Joss Whedon opened the door for a lot of this kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, you look at, I put James Gunn in the same category that I put Whedon, Abrams, those kind of guys.
Right,
you know,
they've
made that transition from television, smart transition, and intelligent television to movies that are just as good as their television shows. And can people give me shit about Buffy? You know, because when mm-hmm. Austin was on air, when we were in film school and I had no fucking cable, I borrowed your Buffy DVDs at your suggestion. I think I got like four or five seasons in maybe. Before I lost the taste of it. But the point of the story is people give me shit about that, and I say, well, do you like the Avengers?
Yeah.
It's basically the same writing.
Exactly. I mean, the
it's
same
almost,
thing.
If you have a taste for that, tell you what, you watch some Buffy, you have a taste for that. So, and the same thing with Alias and all that kind of stuff with Abrams. But I even think Stranger Things has a lot to owe to Super 8.
Mm-hmm.
That nostalgia vibe and that kind of whole feel. I think they're one of the same kind of world.
I agree.
Let's do reviews now. I guess this is going to be a backward ass show.
Yeah,
right?
Let's not talk about Transformers.
Yeah, I mean, that was a 30-second spot, so I want
to see review. I mean, fuck. It's Transformers. We're good.
All right. I want to ask you a question. Is Inferno the worst movie of 2016?
Could be.
Is it's it the possible. Worst movie Tom Hanks or Ron Howard has ever done?
Oh shit, I have to review. It's really bad. I mean, it's
the worst of the series.
It's by far. It's super, super boring. To the point where crazy cool things are happening, right? He's in this hellish world and he's seeing all these horrific sights and things, and you're just bored out of your mind. You're like, can we start the movie now? Like, this has been going on for 20 minutes. You know, let's get this thing going. And then by the time they get moving on anything, you call it right away what's going to happen. And then it happens. And then you're like, yeah. And?
You're ahead of the movie, which is like then, the cardinal sin for screenwriting, obviously.
Well, for a movie like this, I don't know. I don't always dislike getting ahead of a movie or being able to guess something, but in this case it's just so by the numbers that it's just really boring, you know. And then there's not a lot of there is a lot of trying to be excited, you know, excitement, but it's not energy, I guess is what I would say. You know, the movie's super slow, has a real slow pace to it.
I was told that it was an embarrassingly bad acting job by Tom Hanks, the guy I was talking to said it looks like mm-hmm. Hanks was just trying to, like, you know, just get it over with, like was contractually obligated.
Yeah, no one was good in the movie, you know, neither him nor Felicity Jones or
The direction. The direction's
pretty horrific. I know.
But then again, how do you
point.
Tell Tom Hanks and Ron Howard and Brian Grazer that this movie sucks and it's going nowhere? Nobody would have the balls to say that. They probably all knew they were sunk to a fucking albatross, but like...
Well, I could tell them.
Oh, yeah, we just did, didn't we, sir?
I could tell them right now.
You would take our movie.
Hey, the movie sucks.
The movie sucks. Let's move on. All right, on the opposite side of that, I saw Fences, one of the Best Picture nominees this week.
That would be the opposite side of Inferno.
Opposite side of the fence. And this movie's based on a play, August Wilson's 1987 Tony Award-winning play, and it originated with James Earl Jones in the title role of Troy Mason, or Maxon. And I really liked Denzel Washington in this movie. I think he deserves Best Actor because of this movie. The movie itself, he directed, it's a little too stagey, play-like. Mm-hmm. you can see it totally didn't transcend its roots from the stage to the screen, in the sense that there's long stretches where it's very interesting dialogue and the performances make it quite entertaining, but it still holds that play value where it almost could have used the intermission, to be honest with you. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes, but every 10 minutes something more, you know, pivotal happens, and it's so melodramatic and theatrical that it could have used an intermission. I bet you it works better as a play than a movie, but nonetheless, great, great performance by Denzel Washington. Absolutely deserving of the best actor. I know Casey Affleck's been mentioned for, and he did well in Manchester, but this is such an effortlessly good performance by Washington. I do recommend the movie. I just don't think it is the best picture of the year, but it's amongst them.
It is amongst them.
It is amongst them. Yeah, I would put it in my top 15.
That is true.
All right, let's talk about Morgan. I want to know if this, once again, is amongst the worst movies of the year because this got thrashed when it came out. This is a Ridley Scott's kids movie.
I don't know why. Yeah, Luke Scott. I liked the movie, but I guess I'm the only one.
What did you like about
it? Did you wind up seeing this?
I have not seen it yet. Sir, do you want to hold back full review on this, or do you want to talk about it?
We can just talk about it. I
mean, tell me about it, man.
You probably won't wind up watching it, right?
No, not after I get the review. I can find out in 2 minutes what's going on.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the world, and I just like the idea of it, I guess. But it is a smaller sci-fi movie, and it's true sci-fi in the sense that the main character is not... the main character, right? It's a little more high level. It's working on a storyline that's thoughtful, I guess. I don't know. I think it kind of gives it away by being too artistic here and there. Yeah. But then again, I mean, the moment that it's obvious is a very artistic moment, and if you don't pick up on it, then you must be blind. But it's actually two like beautiful shots that I thought, anyways, that totally can it just sums up the entire movie, and these two main characters in it, Morgan and Lee Weathers, who's played by Kate Mara, and then Morgan is that Anya, whatever Taylor-Joy girl, the girl from Split,
who.
She does, especially in this, when they have her all makeuped up and stuff. But and the acting's good. I think what people didn't like is it's really slow in the beginning. It is slow moving. I thought Kate Mara was great in it. And I liked the twist that it took, or just that. I mean, the movie kind of has balls. You know, I really didn't. From the trailers and even from the start of the film, you don't expect it to necessarily end up the way that it does. And it's perhaps a little anticlimactic because the movie's called Morgan, but I thought it was at least interesting. At least try to do something more than just be your basic girl shows up and AI, you know, goes on a killing spree and then she, you know, saves the day. Or the other side of that would be Morgan is actually nice and she escapes, right? And lives happily ever after, right? I mean, those are your options, right? And this takes a different tone and a different path.
I want you to see The Arrival when it comes out because I think that...
I'm trying to get it.
This to me reminded me of kind of the low-rent version of that, especially with Kate Mara. It's kind of red hairish, looking a lot like Amy Adams in this, and a high-minded sci-fi movie that ends up, like you said, a little bit different than you might think it would going into it.
Yeah, this is more of like a Twilight Zone, you know, and not necessarily a good Twilight Zone, but just a Twilight Zone in that sense of sci-fi, you know, where it's dealing with, here's the story, but there's something else going on.
I like that kind of stuff.
And yeah, me too. That's why I thought, that's why I like this, you know, and I didn't obviously spend a lot of money on this. If I had gone to the theater and seen it, I probably would be a little bit more like, eh. But I didn't. I watched it at my home, in my house. That's where you should watch it.
And that's where people will probably find it, obviously, in greater numbers. I saw La La Land just recently, where people are finding in great numbers. And I got to admit, I fucking loved this movie.
I knew it. See, I wanted to go see this.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. I mean, it starts... Let me get this right off the bat. It starts... The people get out of their car in L.A. traffic and start dancing on the roof of their cars. Mm-hmm. And I thought, here we are, 2 minutes into a movie that's 2 hours and 10 minutes. And I'm just... This is going to be a long haul. And within minutes... I am fucking with it, and not only am I with it, I'm with the soundtrack, I'm humming it. I got a man crush on Gosling now all of a sudden. Emma Stone is maybe the best actress of her generation. I mean, this is, I don't know why or how or what happened here, but well, Damien Chazelle, I think his name is Chazelle, I'm very bad with this. He's an Italian kid, though, young. Whiplash, Grand Piano, which is available on Netflix, he wrote. He had a hand in writing 21 Cloverfield Lane. This dude knows what he is fucking doing with the camera, with all of this. And his the amount of references to Casablanca that are in this movie are really prevalent. I mean, they do a verbal one at one point, but, like, it's all over the place. So it made me very sentimental for, you know, that kind of you know, that there is a certain allure to Southern California for creative people for a reason, and this movie taps into that. And it's called La La Land because it's somewhat of a dream state movie, and it's structurally set up a little bit differently than you might think it would be. It uses its music very well. It's not, for it being an original musical, it's not obnoxious. And it doesn't overstay its welcome. And I think that the two leads in it, it's just a charming little beguiling movie is the best way I can describe it. I really was blown away at how much I liked this movie. I do think it is, and if not the best movie of the year, it's obviously one of the best movies of the year.
That's how I feel when I see the trailers. I thought, this will probably be good.
You know what it's like to be a creative person in Southern California, and those nights when, you know, those autumn and autumn, there is no autumn. There's only really two seasons. There's not even two seasons in California.
There's rain and sun.
Yeah, there's spring nights or summer nights when it's just dusk and you got a pink sky and a purple background on some streets, and there's a creative freedom in that you're around people that are also striving to be creative, and it's a very it's very magnetic in a way, and this movie taps into that, but it also taps into the fact that being creative is very hard on relationships and on your psyche and on your sense of self-worth and how hard auditioning is and not believing in yourself and all that kind of stuff. It's just extremely well done. I highly recommend it. All right, let's talk about Get a Job, which stars Miles Teller, who was going to star in La La Land, reportedly, right? But it was too much of a pain in the ass, so they said, no, get a job. Get a different job.
Well, he says he wasn't. I said, that's a lie. Well, right, we say, sure. So you didn't ask for more money? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a job. He should get another job because, it's too many times I see Miles Teller and I just think, why is this guy in movies? And this is another one. First of all, this is just not a very good movie. But he's just doesn't have any screen presence for me.
You know,
am I the only one?
Yeah, I was absolutely that way until I saw just this last year. I liked him in War Dogs, even though Jonah Hill steals the fucking
movie. All right, I still haven't seen that. So.
And I liked him a lot in Bleed for this. But outside of those two movies, I have been done with this kid for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he just really doesn't have a screen presence. And so, then the movie's weak to begin with. This is a movie, I don't know how you have a movie that starts out saying, you know, I'm from a generation where we were just handed things, basically, right? Like... and you know, the whole idea of like you get the participation trophies and all that kind of shit. Right. And so you're softening your kids up and the real world is hard. Right. So the first act is essentially that. And then guess what happens in the second act? The screenwriters just gift them everything. So what's the fucking point? Like, oh, life is so hard until the screenwriters start writing that it's not. It's like, okay, what's the fucking point of this movie? You know, it totally loses itself halfway through and just wants to, it can't decide if it's a silly, you know, summer comedy about kids trying to get jobs or if it's if it wants to make some sort of a preachy, you know, declaration about like how tough it is being out there and trying to get a job now. Just doesn't work on any level.
It sounds rote. It just does not sound good at all. This didn't even go to theaters, right?
Went to theaters, I thought.
Did it really?
I say I thought. Actually, I'm pretty sure it did, but it didn't. It was definitely dumped.
It looked to me like that What If movie, you know, that Daniel Radcliffe movie, which you actually said you liked a lot, when I didn't think was bad. So comparatively, was that a lot better than this?
That's way better than this. Yeah. By far.
Radcliffe's turned into a good little actor.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if not just for Radcliffe, who's just... is someone that you don't think would have a good screen presence when you see him, you know, off the screen. But he does. He just makes it work. I don't know.
So for you tonight, you are not recommending Inferno or Get a Job, but you are saying Morgan is worth a look for curious sci fans.
I liked Morgan. Yeah, if you watch Sci-Fi Channel shit, there's no reason why you shouldn't like Morgan, and a lot of people do. So I don't get why there's so much hate.
Morgan looks like a movie that's destined to end up on the Sci-Fi Channel like indefinitely.
Yeah, that'd be fine. It's where it belongs.
Yeah, in rotation there.
Yeah.
All right, the last movie I have for tonight is Moonlight, which was the early frontrunner for all the big accolades and has somewhat, I think, been quieted, at least buzz-wise, by Manchester and La La Land now coming up from, it's so funny how these movies take on, the frontrunner changes frontrunner status typically, and then there's always surprises. But Moonlight, which I think has unfairly been, jokingly categorized by some as 2016's urban Brokeback Mountain, is really not deserving of that designation. It doesn't fit it at all. This is another movie that's been adapted from a play, but a strong adaptation. And this is a quietly affecting movie. It's not for a lot of the same emotions that Manchester by the Sea was going for, that I felt didn't hit its notes. This hits every single one of them, including a score that is beautiful. I think La La Land obviously has a great soundtrack. It's worthy to listen to it on Spotify or wherever you may get it. But also on Spotify is the score from Moonlight, and the piano riffs and selection of rap and R&B and some classical is well done.
What is the story?
What is the story? All right. The story about a little boy, a boy named Chiron, C-H-I-R-O-N. Mm-hmm. And we meet him when he is about 7 years old, and he is getting his ass kicked by his schoolmates for being gay. And he's running away from them, and he hides in a crack hold-up spot where this older guy named Blue finds him and kind of takes him under his wing. Now, Blue happens to be the neighborhood drug kingpin, if you will. And his mom, the little boy's mom, the nickname of Little, is played by Naomi Harris in a great, great performance that apparently was done on 3 days during a press tour for Spectre a couple years back. He's just nominated for an Oscar as well. Is a nurse, shitty mom, but mostly a crackhead. And we meet the boy again. So it's told in three different stories. We meet the boy again when he's 16 and he's in high school and he's being beat up and he meets another little boy and they have a sexual relationship. And then we meet him later on in life when he's reinvented himself as a 25-year-old man who has now grown into being a drug dealer himself and heavily muscled and very intimidating looking. And he gets a call from the kid that he met when he was a child. And so it sounds extremely simple, and it's a very small story. It's kind of a character piece, but it's told so well and visually done, and the music and everything. It's an experience. It is really the best way you can describe it. And I think that you don't necessarily – a lot of people turn away from it calling it the gay movie. I don't want to say that's the gay movie. I have nothing to do with that. It's not for me. It's actually a movie about desperation, about isolation. I mean, I think pretty much anybody can relate to these themes that are presented in this movie, and it's extremely well done. And if there's a flaw, it's the ending to me. It's kind of an ambiguous ending, but it's a quietly ambiguous ending to where when the lights come up, you go, wow, I mean, that was a lot heavier and better. It's just, I don't see how anyone can come out of this and say it wasn't a good movie, is what I'm saying. Yeah, I think it's, once again, amongst the year's best. But we're splitting hairs. This is a very, very strong year for Best Picture nominees. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. You say that, but I haven't seen these movies, so I just can't believe you. Because I've seen the trailers for these, and I've seen the trailer for Moonlight, and it doesn't look that good.
No.
So when you say it is, I'm thinking, wow, that's crazy. Because to me, I see the trailers and I think, oh, wow, it's like a serious Chuck and Buck,
It's absolutely not. It's not. I know what you're talking about. It's not.
Right.
It's really a lot more affecting than that. And a couple of years ago, remember the kid that they followed for Boyhood all those years and all the hoopla for that. And I thought that was really overblown as a performance and the movie. This is way more interesting to follow. Three different actors portraying a character as he grows in different stages of his life. And without any sort of real formal acting skills, I think only the last guy had any sort of the grown man version. But it's just beautifully done movie. Absolutely beautiful. And I don't know if this is going to be a one-off for Barry Jenkins, the director, if he can match this kind of thing again. But The fact that this isn't a bigger movie is interesting to me, because I think this should be shown. I mean, I think anybody could watch this and enjoy it.
Well, shit, I'm going to have to go to the movies.
I mean, I
was all ready to just be done with, I know, with right? it. And now you're making me, I mean, I really got to go see La La Land. I was going to go see it. I couldn't pull the trigger. I waited. I went and saw Split instead. I'm not upset about that. I love Split, but I want to go see La La Land with the big speakers, you know? It's good, right? The sound.
Oh, it's beautiful. And the sound. Yeah. I mean, they present it. It starts and says in CinemaScope. Oh. You know, it's kind of a throwback in the colors. Mm-hmm. And I 100% would recommend La La Land in a theater. And the other ones you could probably catch at home and not worry about it. But I do think you should see Moonlight at some point and Fences just for the performance by Washington. So I recommend all three of these. Obviously, they're amongst the year's best and a heavily competitive year for the Oscars, I think.
It's so funny how the smaller movies, and I know, I've seen this happen before, movies that I didn't think would be very good, that were up for Oscars, and then you see them, and they're smaller movies like these, and they're fucking magnificent, right?
They're so good.
And you think, how the hell can that be? You know, how can this stuff be good? And everyone bitches and complains that they can't get, you know, Batman versus Superman up for an Oscar, and you think, well, I mean, this is why I think they're selling these things wrong, though, somehow, too. Does it, the Moonlight, that trailer's not good.
It's just such a small movie. I mean, I'm surprised it's made the nearly $20 million it did, because when you see this, you go, okay, this could almost be someone's thesis movie, you know, but it's shot, the cinematography is beautiful, the location is beautiful, the acting. I mean, it just feels lived in. It feels real. I mean, to me, when I saw Brokeback Mountain, it felt like it felt pandering in a lot of ways. Like, oh, this is a very calculated approach to reach a certain audience and say a certain thing. Whereas this felt totally organic. It felt like, I mean, it can be topical, because you can always make this topical. You know, there's always debate about this subject and the fact of masculinity and you know, homosexuality hiding behind.
It just feels like a story, right? I think it's what you're telling. It just feels like someone's telling you a story, right? Which is always better than
story.
Than someone saying, "I wanted to tell this story because of X, Y, and Z," and you think, "Well, just tell the story."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel like somebody is preaching at all in this movie. It just feels like somebody is showing you a tragic little tale about abused people in shitty situations. So, which could be said for Fences as well. But like I said, Fences is a little bit more play-like, and La La Land is an absolute just dreamlike blast. I mean, those tonally, they couldn't be any different apart, Moonlight, La La Land, but both great.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
but get those soundtracks to both Moonlight and La La Land. I would recommend both of them. Especially if you're going to go see La La Land, you might want to listen to the music first and kind of soften yourself up to it, maybe.
I've heard the music, you know, and what little I've heard, I've tried really not to, because I've really liked it. So
yeah, as did
I'm like, oh, I could, why? But I want to see it performed in the movie before I experience it outside of that, you know?
And you know what pisses me off about fucking Ryan Gosling, too? I mean, the guy does he have to be good looking in great shape, but he's got to also learn how to play the fucking piano that well and sing that well? I mean, you asshole. You're an asshole. It's not like Ryan Reynolds is out there breakdancing and shit. Get out of here.
Well, he might be.
He probably could, too. You know, it just amazes me, like, when an actor, like when you hear something like, oh, Ryan Gosling just taught himself how to play the fucking piano, and she's like, no, Tom Cruise taught himself how to fucking fly a jet. Like, what are you talking about? How much time did you get to perfect this, sir?
Well, either that's just like Steven Seagal is a black belt, right?
Well, yeah, and he worked for the CIA, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, same. Yeah, sure, I believe it.
Well, I believe that's the end of episode 315. We want to thank you guys for joining us for another action-packed episode here. As always, we thank you guys for your continued support. You can check out our past episodes, or at least the last 299 of them, over at iTunes. And you can get our whole catalog at TalkShoe, Podbean, I believe, and MovieMavericks.com, where we got every single one of them all time. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!